Skeptics.
This is Charlotte Talks. I'm Mike Collins. The midterm election season is underway. States are completing their primaries in advance of the November election, and North Carolina is turning out to be an important state with regard to control of the Congress. For that reason, we'll be seeing a lot of money pouring in from out of state to support candidates and issues well in advance. So we're going to spend a few hours talking to leaders of the two political parties right here in our state. We spoke last week with the executive director of the North Carolina Democratic Party, and today we pivot toward the Republicans. Carolyn Justice is the vice chair of the North Carolina Republican Party and a former House representative for the 16th District from 2003 to 2012. She resigned from the House in 2012, citing her support of term limits. And Carolyn Justice joins us for the hour. Thank you for doing so. Welcome.
And thank you for having me, and welcome. I bring you greetings from Topsail Island, North Carolina, where everybody needs to be this week,
right,
cooling off in the ocean.
I'll take your cottage then.
Don't have a cottage, just live near it.
All right. And if you'd like to join our conversation, you can email us at charlottetalks@wfae.org or find us on Facebook or Twitter. Can I start with term limits? Because that's something that a lot of politicians talk about and spoken about the need for and their belief in, and then they don't take advantage of it, but you did. You stepped down as a result of those beliefs. To me, that takes a lot of gumption. Why did you do it?
Well, actually, 10 years before I was a state House member, I was a county commissioner. And when I ran for the county commission, I said the same thing. I believe in term limits. I believe you get... it's not that I don't believe people can't be good after 10 years, and that was sort of my limit. It was that we just need to make room for new and fresh ideas and folks who need their turn. So I made that commitment early on as a county commissioner. I abided by it as a county commissioner. When I ran for the House, I said, 10 years, that's it. I also said at the beginning of that county commissioner's term that I would never take a dime of PAC money or lobbyist money, and I never did in 20 years.
Hmm. You know, you were in the State House for 9 years. It seems to me that after nine...
10.
Okay, 10. You kind of learn your way around the place. You know where the bodies are buried. You know how to pull the levers. And you'd probably begun to work your way up the power ladder, especially after the Republican takeover. That's when you could really start having some influence. Why throw that away? Isn't there something to be said for experience versus turning everything over to amateurs in the best sense of the word, who come there because they feel a dedication to come there, but also they don't know how it works yet?
Well, that premise would work if you assumed that everybody left in 1 year and everybody was new, but that's not how it happens, or would it happen if everybody agreed to term limits. It would be a staging out thing, and new guys coming in would understudy under those that had been there for some time. I just feel strongly about it. I've just seen legislators that were just there far too long, mm-hmm. and it's their way or the highway, and I just don't think that's healthy. I also think you get complacent. I think your whole focus becomes your next election and not what am I doing here that's best for my constituents and the folks of North Carolina. I don't begrudge anybody that stays longer. I think that's fine. Some will be great doing that. It was just not what was right for me.
So what did your colleagues say when you said, I'm exercising my beliefs here?
I said it from the beginning. They were forewarned is forearmed.
When we spoke with the representative of the Democratic Party last week, we talked about the fact that Republicans are extremely good at creating a message and then sticking to that message almost in lockstep. And it sometimes looks like it comes from the National Party on down. How aligned is the state Republican Party with the National Republican Party?
Well, you know, I'm not even going to try to answer that question because I don't know the answer to that question. I've never been involved with the National Party. Spoken to one person since I'm vice chair that is with the National, well, maybe two. So I don't believe it. I think the voice you hear in North Carolina is coming from the North Carolina party platform. I think that's where if it sounds like it's the same message and over and everybody's saying the same thing, I think that's where it's coming from. Well, I mean, if you look, pull down our platform and look at it, you'll see it is exactly what we all stand for and attempt to articulate every time we speak. Article number two, free enterprise system is the most effective and just economic system in the world. Article 3, liberty is founded upon a belief in the inherent dignity of the human person and recognition that individuals possess God-given inherent rights. I could go through the party platform and you'd see I'd be espousing everything that's then broadened into statements to become what the mission is.
Well, let me change up the question, because if you go through the Democratic platform with Democrats, many of them, perhaps most of them, would espouse all of the beliefs put forth in their party platform. But there would be inevitably people who would go off message or people who would adopt some other talking point that perhaps is not the most important talking point to people who are running things, running the show, so to speak. The Republicans are pretty good at sticking to whatever the message is decided upon. Who decides the message, and how do you explain people being able to stick to it?
Well, the individual members of the Republican Party themselves decided. As a matter of fact, we just made some adjustments, amendments to our platform just this last week in Cherokee at our state convention. Everybody comes up to the microphone and says, I don't like line 3 under section 4. I think the wording ought to be X. Or the Resolutions Committee presents resolutions of things as they change and evolve, issues as they change. And then the body adopts that resolution and says, yes, we agree, we believe in that. Some of us are getting together pretty soon and already have with some folks in our Tea Party arm to say, okay, now we've won the primary. The primary's over. We have a candidate who has won that primary. Now, how do we come together and move forward? And we're going to coalesce around our party platform. Now, our sort of wings, our branches of the Republican Party in North Carolina, of course, are the Tea Party folks, and then what is called maybe the mainline Republicans. And then there's the Christian right. I mean, we have segments that certain things are more important to them than they are to others. We're working to pull them together. For us, we feel like we can coalesce around this platform and all speak with a voice. If you look at the Democratic Party, their wings sort of are the the LGBT. I'm sorry, I just never can remember those initials. Union of the environmentalist group. The NAACP, those groups. Now, if they have trouble getting those folks to coalesce around their platform, then I'm sure that makes it difficult for them to deal. But we're not having so much trouble getting our guys to pull together.
I'm taking it that since you are the vice chair of the party, the Republican Party here in North Carolina, that when you say we will get our people to coalesce, that you are coming from the mainstream part of the party. And then there is, as you said, the Tea Party wing of the party. And they don't seem to want to coalesce around anything unless it's their idea completely. So how do you know how do you know that they will coalesce around your platform?
Oh, because we're already talking, and they already are. And I don't know really what I am. I think I'm a little bit country and a little bit rock and roll. I think I'm a little bit of both. I come from a county that we're pretty feisty in Pender County. They tried one time to locate a hazardous waste incinerator in our county, and I was here in Raleigh picketing, and I've picketed the General Assembly before because of unfunded mandates to counties. So I'm kind of a Tea Party person. But that's why when this primary was over, we had to say to each other, okay, how do we move forward? Do we take our marbles and go home? Or do we say, okay, what can we agree on? And we just keep coming back to this platform that when we go down it, we say, how about Article 4? How about Article 5? And we all say, yeah, we agree with that.
You know, your party was out of power in North Carolina for nearly a century. And then suddenly in 2010, you took over the State House and you got the governor's office in 2012. What happened to turn things around for the Republicans?
Wow. I don't know. I was listening to the lady last week on your show that was the executive director and of the Democratic Party, and mm-hmm. she said something really interesting. I wrote it down because I wanted to remember what it was. Of course, I can't find it. That no one expected when the Republicans took office, no one expected the radical legislation that would come out of them. And I thought when she said that, wow, that's strange. Republicans have been sitting and waiting for 140 years to run that stuff. Why was anybody surprised? And as for me in my house, I served 8 years in the minority in the General Assembly as a Republican. And so I'm real up close and familiar with how the General Assembly functioned under the Democrats. And, you know, the voice out there kept saying, though we talk a good story here when the Democrats were in control about being supportive of teachers, no raises were forthcoming. Though we talk about all these wonderful things we want to do, legislation to accomplish them wasn't forthcoming. The eugenics program, I hope your audience knows what I'm talking about.
Many shows.
No legislation was forthcoming under the Democrat-controlled General Assembly. That didn't happen until Republicans got in control. So I think people were getting a little, concerned that it was a lot of talk and not a lot of action. And then I believe your lady last week, Casey Mann, said that moments of clarity for Republicans after Obama victory, she said, and the Dems just rested on their victory. These were her words about what happened. And I think she's absolutely right. I think Republicans had a moment of clarity after Obama was elected, and that Democrats were so heady about the victory, sort of set on their laurels and weren't paying attention when the when the big change came. So, boy, that was a long answer to a short question.
That's okay. Because of the solid control that Republicans now have over the state government here, do you feel, does the party feel, and leaders within the legislature feel that they have a mandate from the people to make whatever changes they see fit and to put their stamp on things?
Well, let me go back. Having served for 8 years under Democrat leadership, I certainly know that they believed and felt that, and that's exactly what they did. I think that's what people do when they get the floor and they get the gavel.
Mm-hmm.
You have to remember or try to associate with the thought that these bills that came flushing out the minute the Republicans were in the majority, they didn't go to Raleigh and start writing bills. These bills were written years ago. These bills have been run every year, even while Republicans were in the minority, but of course never got traction to get to the floor of the House or couldn't win when they got there. So this wasn't pent-up aggression, I don't mean it that way, or hostility. It was just, it is what they've stood for all along. It is what Republicans believe in. It's their turn at bat, and these are the bills that the folks that sent them there said they wanted. And that's who you're representing, whether you realize it or not. The folks who sent you there, this is what they wanted.
Well, aren't you representing the whole state?
I said, yeah, that's why I clarified that. In essence, that's what it seems like, though, to the outside world and to the person writing the legislation, because you wouldn't have won if these people hadn't sent you there. Mm-hmm. Then you are representing everybody. I've had votes before where I knew I had stepped out the boundaries of my particular constituency because it was for the greater good of North Carolina.
Let me stop you for a second. Carolyn Justice is our guest, vice chair of the North Carolina Republican Party. The Republicans are getting their hour after last week with the Democrats, and we'll come back in just a moment. Charlotte Talks on WFAE. Support for Charlotte Talks comes from WFAE members and ExploreBooneArea.com, a summer escape with family, friends, and the cool breezes of the North Carolina High Country, where the average summer highs are 77 degrees. ExploreBooneArea.com. Well, summer is looming large. In fact, it begins, if I'm not mistaken, Saturday, June 21st, and that means summer camp is on the horizon, at least for kids. This is something that a lot of children and their parents look forward to, probably for different reasons. Other kids dread it. They fear and experience homesickness, and some parents worry if their child will be okay. So Dr. Michael Thompson, a child psychologist who believes in children getting away from their parents, he says it's a good thing, and he will explain why when he joins us tomorrow at 9.
On the next Diane Rehm Show, more than 40,000 unaccompanied children have been caught at the U.S.-Mexico border since October, the immigration crisis, and dimming prospects for reform.
Join the Diane Rehm Show this morning from 10 to noon after Charlotte Talks on 90.7 WFAE, Charlotte's NPR news source.
It's Charlotte Talks on listener-funded 90.7 WFAE and 90.3 WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. Our guest today, Carolyn Justice, the vice chair of the North Carolina Republican Party and a former state house representative who voluntarily stepped down in 2012 after 10 years because she believes in term limits. We were talking just about the mandate that Republicans feel that they have, or at least the pent-up legislation that they've been putting through or trying to put through the legislature and unsuccessfully until they got control of the legislature in 2010. And exactly who people who go to the legislature, be they Democrats or Republicans, represent. And I'm curious how you feel about the Moral Monday protesters, because even though you have put through a lot of legislation and made a lot of changes that you firmly believe in and have tried to put through for years and now have the opportunity to do so, there are people, a considerable number of people, who disagree with you. Do you even consider, or do you feel that you must consider their position, given the control that you have of the House, the Senate, and the governor's mansion?
Absolutely. Absolutely. No question about that. You know, it's sort of come about that Reverend Barber has become sort of the de facto leader of the North Carolina Democratic Party, from my perspective, or presents himself as an advocate for the working class. But many of us believe the Moral Monday agenda would be devastating North Carolina's economy and its workers. So do you see, though we understand and I have compassion for his message, I so firmly believe that it would be so costly, it would be detrimental to the very workers that he's representing. And I, for one, applaud Senate Pro Tem Phil Berger for meeting with a group of citizens who certainly have every right to petition their government. However, immediately after the meeting and once looking at this agenda that was presented to Berger, it revealed that to fulfill this mission that this group would like to see accomplished would cost $7 to $10 billion. Now, that would be so devastating to this job market that's coming back and this growth that's coming. And I swear the governor cuts a ribbon on another industry every week. You got to admit, it's really coming in strong. Our unemployment has just plummeted and things are looking better. Well, if you had to raise the corporate income tax from 6 cents to 50 cents to pay for this, you'd see a reverse, I believe. This is my opinion. I believe you'd see a reverse in that growth of industry and business and reduction in the unemployment. So it's not that Republicans say, oh, boo, we don't care about these workers. We don't care about these mothers. We don't care about these children. It's our belief that how they would like to correct it would be devastating to the very people who need the help.
Could part of the problem be that Republicans don't relate to these people because they have never experienced their lives? That's not meant to be judgmental. It's simply a fact of life. If you don't live in poverty or you don't face serious financial questions or childcare issues or the ability to get transportation to and from a voting place or to and from work, etc. If you don't understand that because you've never experienced it, then maybe you just can't relate.
Well, I don't know. Senator Kay Hagan's one of the wealthiest members of Congress. and everybody believes she can understand it.
Mm-hmm.
I know I've had daycare issues in my life when I had to go to work, and I have two sons, and I've had transportation issues, and I've had difficulty buying the groceries I wish I could buy for my children. I certainly can relate. And I think if you went out on the street and questioned the average Republican, I'm not talking about the big business guy that we're all painted to be. I'm talking about your average Republican. You'd find all of us have dealt at some time with difficult issues. I do not believe, I hope I'm not wrong about this, I do not believe that it's not that we don't understand. It's that we are so firmly entrenched in the belief that a free market will help solve those problems, and that that's driven from our compassion for people who need a job, who we need to get this unemployment down, we need to bring businesses in. We cannot see for the life of ourselves why that's not seen as the solution to people's financial problems.
Let's go back to the actual internal workings of the Republican Party, because in Virginia, we just saw a remarkable thing happen. The House Majority Leader in the United States House of Representatives, Eric Cantor, defeated in a primary by an unknown, complete political novice who spent practically no money at all on that campaign. And for the first time ever since the creation of the leadership position, he has been defeated. This is a signal that there is a struggle for the soul of the Republican Party. And you're saying that it's not going to happen here in North Carolina because you're going to have people from the Tea Party and for the more moderate wing coalesce around the platform. How do you know that's the case? And why is that the case, if that's the case, in North Carolina but not in Virginia and other places in the country?
Well, I'm not saying that those kind of things aren't going to happen. I'm saying that I believe that more and more the Republican Party in North Carolina has realized its need to reach out and embrace each other. Now,
Virginia had a lot of power with Eric Cantor. Why didn't Virginia see it that way?
Well, you know, Virginia, I lived in Virginia for a while. That's a strange bird. You don't even file, register to vote by party. Did you know that's strange?
Hmm.
And look when they had this, they have these primaries all over the state at all different times. I just have to say that. That's confusing. But they are not made up of the same demographics as North Carolina, as those two states are. So I don't know that I can compare them like that. I do believe this, that in North Carolina, we said early on, we being all Republicans, or let's say the mainstay party, these folks that have developed this Tea Party organization have got something valuable to say. They're saying, hey, I'm looking at Washington, and I don't think the Republicans are doing any better job than the Democrats up there. It was this so fed up with government mentality. Don't you believe that's sort of what started the Tea Party?
Was
just, I'm fed up.
Mm-hmm.
And it's made up of unaffiliated and probably some probably at some point some Democrats and Republicans. When the mainstay Republicans, or they didn't even know they were mainstay, they were just the Republican Party, said, wow, we wouldn't have won that vote, and that vote without that Tea Party. I mean, they realized that. When the Democrats woke up and had the rude awakening that they were dozing off while we were winning that last election and took the supermajority in the House and Senate and the governorship, Republicans, I think, were doing the same thing, saying, hey, we have got to find common ground here. We've got to find common ground with the Christian right. You know, that was the whole group of people that supported Reverend Harris in the Senate primary. Reverend Harris himself, Heather Grant, and a couple of other guys who ran against Tom Tillis, not Brannon, I'll say that for you, came to the convention, stood up on the stage, arm in arm with Tillis, and said, here it is, here's our man. So already groups were coming together. Tea Party folks were in the audience. We have said, this is it, it's over. Are there people that are still registered Republicans who say, I'm not voting for him, I'm not voting at all, I'm so mad? Sure there are. There are extremely liberal Democrats who are not voting for their candidate either. I mean, we see that by virtue of the other candidate running against
him. In an interview with The Guardian, Tom Tillis, who is the Republican candidate for United States Senate against Kay Hagan, said that if his victory tilted the Congress toward Republican control, that, quote, maybe we would have a Senate for the first time in a long time that solves problems, a Senate that passes a budget, that repeals Obamacare, that asserts itself more when you have President Obama failing on foreign policy. Isn't the problem with the Senate and the Congress at large in not solving problems, part of the problem is the fact that they refuse to work with the president and other Democrats and because they're unwilling to compromise? And doesn't the Tea Party exacerbate that?
Oh, well, gee, you're asking me really to make intelligent statements here. I don't know. I don't know if the Tea Party exacerbates that. I don't know about that. I know this. Having served as a legislator, though lots of people don't want to hear this, these are just the facts, Jack. There are times when you have to look across that aisle and say, I want this so badly. I think it's so good for North Carolina. And the other side says, well, if you'll take off that little piece right there, I'll vote with you. It has to happen. It happens in your house. It happens in your business.
Yes, but when it happens, the Tea Party says, I'm done with you. Eric Cantor.
And we don't know. I mean, we say the Tea Party. We could be speaking of the voice of one or two people that are leaders and not everybody that's really a part of the Tea Party movement. Because, I just think that happens a lot. But what I'm saying is, as long as something gets accomplished, I think people will accept it. Now, you go back to this book I started reading from you from the party platform. Mm-hmm. But you really ought to stick to the roadmap. You really ought to. I can list bill after bill. I walked into the floor and said, there is no way I'm voting for that. I'm not doing that. And got in there and saw pieces of the puzzle that I did not know that changed my mind. On the stop smoking in restaurants bill, of course I was against that. If you don't want to go to a restaurant where they smoke, don't go. I mean, I'm a simple Republican. However, the restaurants in my county called me and begged me to vote for that bill. Because had they not stopped smoking in restaurants, they were going to have to put in these large, very expensive, massive ANSL systems to remove smoke from the other side of the knee wall where you could or couldn't smoke. And it was going to put them out of business.
Now, how did I end up voting?
I voted to stop smoking.
You said that as a Republican, you believe that if you don't want to go to a restaurant that allows smoking, don't go. Well, right. What about the restaurants? If you don't want to allow, as a restaurant operator, smoking, don't allow it.
Oh, that's exactly right. You don't have to. What I'm saying, though, is the restaurants in my county, because having to put in the expensive ANSL systems was going to put them out of business.
But what, you wouldn't have to put it in if you didn't allow smoking. That's my point.
You know the answer to that. They didn't want to upset their customers by telling them they couldn't smoke. That's what I'm saying.
They wanted the government to tell them they couldn't smoke.
Right. They wanted the government to handle it for them. The very people who want the government to stay out of their business. So I'm saying everything's not black and white and simple in legislation. Right. There's all these, pieces.
That's something that novices don't really understand. And before you get in, you don't know what you don't know. And then things become clear once you get there, which is why presidents and congresspeople and senators receive such criticism, particularly from the far left and the far right wings of the two parties. So how do you explain that to the Tea Party or to the liberal Democrats?
Well, I've had a lot of luck in my life just being honest with people. I feel like I've just been honest with you today. I just have a lot of luck because, first of all, the average person, though they're very smart people, haven't had the opportunity to learn or experience or witness the legislative process. Now, I'm not saying once you witness it, it's okay to compromise your morals or what's on the platform. I'm just saying once you do, you understand a little better how difficult it is for your legislator to just stay in absolute blinders on, headed in one direction, because something will come up in a conversation. You'll say, gosh, I didn't know that. Mm-hmm. Do you have time to get on the phone and call every person in your district who voted for you? No, you don't. So as long as you stick as close to the platform as you can, and remember to do what you promised the folks you do. But the most important rule about elected office, I believe, is run for office. When you win it, do not be concerned about ever winning again.
Boy.
Focus on the time you've been elected.
And how many?
And if you win again, good luck.
How many of your colleagues and how many of the people with you in the Republican Party would agree with you on that?
From the bottom of their heart kind of belief, they probably do.
Okay.
But then when you get in the fray of it, things change.
I don't want to run out of time before we talk about some substantive things like the United States Senate race, which some say is not only a race that will determine control of the Congress, but also it will be a referendum on the Affordable Care Act. Do you think Obamacare will become a key issue in that race here in this state?
Oh, I think it is the issue.
Why?
I think it absolutely is the issue.
Because there are those who like the idea that they now have access to health care despite pre-existing conditions. And I guess there are also people upset that they don't have access to health care because the Republican-controlled state government rejected federal Medicaid funds.
Right.
So what are the issues with Obamacare in your mind?
Well, and then there's the thousands and thousands and thousands whose health insurance went up so high they can't afford it. I mean, this is a broad spectrum. This is not one group of people, and this is a great thing. If you had a pre-existing illness, you're a happy camper. You know, if you're in this category, you're real happy. If you're in this category where your health insurance doubled and you're going to have to drop it and you don't know what you're going to do, you're not happy. If you're in a small business and you can't afford, you don't qualify for the Obamacare type of policy, and you're trying to find one because there's only one carrier in North Carolina. Other than that, you're not a happy camper. So this is a big divide here. It's not.
But isn't it? Do we only have one or two providers in North Carolina? And some counties only have one provider in North Carolina. That is true. But isn't that partly because we chose as a state not to run our own exchange?
Right.
Well, isn't that the Republicans' fault?
That was a Republican decision, to the best of my knowledge.
Okay,
yes.
So isn't it your fault that we only have one choice in some counties?
I know that that's the way you're going to look at it. I know that's the way people look at it. But the truth of it is, we just don't believe that we need to be in this business. That all you had to do, the simpler solution would have been to open it up so you could get insurance across state lines, have them compete with each other, come in with more affordable policies. Don't tell me where I have to go to the doctor. Don't tell me who I have to go see and what test I can't have. Do you see again?
Everybody who has insurance with their employer prior to Obamacare has those restrictions. You're part of a plan that puts you in a certain hospital system. You can't see every doctor, or you're out of plan and you have to pay extra. That's just the way insurance has always worked.
Not to the extreme it is with this. And I'm just telling you the experiences people have had that I'm involved with and what's happened to me and my hospitalization and me and my doctors. No, not that kind of confining control over my health care. I'm just saying it for Republicans, it comes back to their basic platform. Do they want to see people denied health care? Gosh, no, they don't. They just believe that their way of handling it and fixing it would have been much better.
I have 10 seconds. So after the break, I'd like you to come back and tell me, is there a Republican plan? Republicans want to get rid of Obamacare. Is there a Republican plan to improve health care and replace it with something else? We'll get that answer when we come back with Carolyn Justice, the vice chair of the North Carolina Party. Support for Charlotte Talks comes from WFAE members and Donald Hack Diamonds, serving Charlotte for over 30 years with fine diamonds, engagement rings, custom design, and jewelry for all occasions. Now at their new Charlotte location, Morrowcroft Village, and DonaldHack.com. On Wednesday, the U.S. Patent and Trademark Office announced it was canceling the Washington Redskins trademark registration. The plaintiffs, like many fans across the country, had argued the name was disparaging to Native Americans. So, on the Diane Rehm Show in 20 minutes at 10 o'clock, guest host Susan Page and her guest will talk about what the ruling means for the team and evolving notions of what is offensive. It's coming right up on WFAE. If you'd like to join our conversation, now's the time at WFAE.org/Charlotte Talks or, of course, on Facebook or Twitter. We're coming right back.
Every day, public radio journalists go where the story is.
Egyptian bomb squads are examining the scene of the explosion in Nasser City.
In Pakistan, militants armed with heavy weapons have attacked a prison.
Kenyan authorities say there was no one left inside, but the Kenyan Red Cross says there's still 71 people missing.
Count on public radio journalists for vital news from all corners of the globe.
Stay connected with global and local news throughout the day on 90.7 WFAE.
It's Charlotte Talks on WFAE and WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. Carolyn Justice is our guest. She's the vice chair of the North Carolina Republican Party and a former state house representative for District 16. I want to go back to this Affordable Care Act, because a lot of Republicans have pledged and have been tried many times, I think 34 times in Congress, to repeal it. And the Democrats are hoping that as this thing rolls out and more people are covered, that people will become enamored of it, like Social Security, because they have something to rely on in times of bad health. You're saying it's a bad bill. Republicans universally say it's a bad law. What would you replace it with? And do you have a plan?
Well,
if you gain control of the Congress next time around, you might have a chance at repealing it. So what would you put in its place?
Well, since I'm not going to be headed to Washington when we win that general election, and it will be Tom Tillis and not me, I don't have a plan in my position.
But
I do know that we've had many, many Republican Congress people with a plan that they've proposed that they can't get anywhere and can't get up off the
And what is the
off
plan?
The ground.
What is the plan?
Oh, I'm sorry. I couldn't detail those plans. There's several different ones, and I couldn't detail it. And I'll be honest with you to tell you that straight up.
Okay, where could voters go to read about those plans?
Well, I tell you what. When I get back to where I can get to my own computer, I will send you three or four connections, contacts where they can go to those contacts and see what those proposed bills were.
Okay. U.S. News and World Report says that the Democratic Party is trying to paint Tom Tillis as more conservative than he is. That might be a plus in some Republican circles. So tell me, how conservative is he?
Well, I can speak from firsthand knowledge because I served with Tom for Speaker of the House, for at least 4 years. Maybe it was six. I didn't get the negative during the primary, but of course I couldn't say anything because as vice chair of the party, I couldn't take sides in a primary, and I stick to rules always.
Mm-hmm.
So now that primary is over, I can say honestly, I don't get it. He was as conservative as anybody in that building. It was under his leadership that those conservative bills that have been pent up for all those years and the agenda that the Republican majority was sent there with in the first year that we were in the majority, not a supermajority, but in a majority, we had a 10-point list, and we did everything on that list. And in the second round, there was all kinds of other bills that had been pent up that were coming through. And he was the leader that, managed that all getting through the House. So I'm not quite sure. I think I keep hearing this issue that, of course, doesn't affect my side of the state, so I'm not as familiar with it, about toll roads that seem to upset some people. I can't speak to that. But in general, he's a proven leader, an excellent candidate, and he's proven results as a state speaker. He balanced the budget. He's making North Carolina one of the strongest states for jobs creation and reforming government. So it's more accountable to taxpayers. I think he's going to be a candidate suitable to fit this platform that we all need to coalesce around.
The National Republican Party is said to have faced key issues in the coming years as the population demographics change. And the pundits say that because of certain policies and platform planks in the National Party, that they seem to be occasionally unfair toward women or insensitive toward women, insensitive toward minorities, etc. A Winston-Salem website called CamelCityDispatch.com released an article that quoted a 2012 comment by Tom Tillis citing the traditional population in a comment he was making about support for then-presidential nominee Mitt Romney. And he said the traditional population of North Carolina and the United States is more or less stable. It is not growing, while the Hispanic and immigrant population and the African-American population are growing. What does traditional population mean, and what makes that group traditional?
I read that, too, and I can tell you lots of things that Mr. Barber has said, that if I look at it with a jaundiced eye, mm-hmm. I can see communists behind every curtain. But I use the term traditionally speaking, so maybe that's why I'm hearing it differently than anybody else. Traditionally, population is this. Now, it's changing by these things. I have heard Tom Tillis in closed caucus meetings where there were only Republicans, no media, nobody else there to hear. This man could not, he is the most non-prejudiced human that I know. I know Democrats more prejudiced than I would even dare to think him to be. I cannot see it in his makeup. I've never heard anything in all the time I've spent with him that would indicate he meant anything other than just traditionally, this is what the population has been. And here is now what's happening. I just don't get it. We're going to go for every little thread we can pull. And are the Republicans going to do it to the Democrats? Boy, if we get a chance to see a thread.
All right. Let's talk about some issues that are causing Tom Tillis some problems and other Republicans some problems. The state party, if I'm not mistaken, is opposed to gambling. Is that correct?
Yes.
And yet, the Republican-controlled North Carolina House has pushed a bill through that would provide money for a teacher pay raise using lottery receipts. And the legislature recently voted to increase spending on advertising for the lottery so that would work. So people would buy lottery tickets and therefore more money would come in for teacher pay raises. And isn't that lottery gambling?
Well, and I think there's also a bill going through that increases the funding for education to not gamble. So those two things, I think, have probably offset each other. But you and I are debating semantics here. Your real question is, how can a party that says it doesn't believe in gambling be endorsing spending more money? It is a conundrum. There's no two ways about it. If you had to make – here's one of those legislative things, though. You're sitting there, you know you have to give these teachers raises. By the way, Republicans gave the only significant raise to teachers in the last 5 years. That gets missed. And they're trying desperately now to give them a raise. They're trying desperately to pay back this unemployment money to the federal government, which, by the way, they're doing a phenomenal job of. There are so many things right now that need to be funded, but they so strongly believe that if you raise the tax right now on the average person, that you will so devastate their personal economy that you just can't do it. And this rhetoric about, oh, you just don't like raising taxes on the rich. I'm not rich. I don't want you to raise my tax. I will spend less at the grocery store. I will spend less on entertainment. I know it affects the economy. So they're so focused on are they looking for alternate ways? And was this one? Yes, it was an alternate.
So the lottery is a bargain with the devil.
Well, it's already a law. It's not they're not making a law to pass a lottery. Yeah,
but you could repeal the lottery.
How it will be advertised.
You could stop the lottery tomorrow if you wanted to.
No, you don't have the votes to do that.
Okay. One of the ways that teachers may get a raise is if they give up tenure. That was a Republican idea, I believe. Is that a fair trade-off?
That was a Senate bill.
Okay. Is that a fair trade-off? You control the Senate. Is that a fair trade-off?
Well, the Senate's proposal is to give them an 11% raise, traded off for tenure and getting rid of the teacher's assistants in K-3, I think. The house
and isn't that where they need them the most, when children are young and somewhat unruly?
I agree with you. Okay. Well, it's not just unruly. I'm the mother of grown boys, grown men. Mm-hmm. And when they were in kindergarten, I didn't want them walking down the hall to the bathroom by themselves. I'm sorry. Okay. Maybe I was overprotective. Mm-hmm. So I agree with you. I think you need to have teacher's assistance. But that's the Senate version that went over to the House. The House sent back this version last week that says, no, we keep the teacher's assistance. They keep the teachers. They keep their tenure. But it's only a 5% raise. So there is nothing definite. Now, this is all in flux.
Well, tell me how this fits in with the Republican Party platform, because it states, the platform states, parents should expect excellent public education. In the face of budget cuts, the lack of teacher pay raises, cutting of funds for teaching assistants and more, how can the public get excellent public education?
Well, good grief. They're proposing a large salary increase in both houses, 11% in one, 5% in the other. Just 3 or 4 weeks ago, the governor came up with the plan to give all new teachers a $3,500 raise. You come into the system, you're making $3,500 more to begin with. I don't get what the argument with it. I don't even get it with teachers. Now they're finally getting what they want. They've been begging for it. Republicans have been trying to give them a raise for the whole time they've been in charge. Gave them the last raise they got. It was under leadership of the Republicans. And now they're picketing, saying, but we're not sure you're going to have the money to pay for the raise. Cut me some slack. I mean, they're doing exactly what you're asking them to do. Now you're questioning, will the money be there to pay for it? I'm not understanding this. And I saw a teacher on the news this morning, WRAL, that said half the teachers in her system were leaving. Why? They're about to get this huge raise. Why are they leaving?
Well, there must be a reason.
I'm not understanding.
All right. Well, there must be a reason. I'm not sure what that may be, but there must be a reason. Part of it, it seems to me, is that we have a lot of needs in this state. The country has a lot of needs. We have a lot of infrastructure needs. And I heard yesterday that the Congress is considering raising the national gasoline tax, I think by 12 cents a gallon, to pay for roads and bridges that are crumbling and are in a sad state of affairs. And the same is true in North Carolina. But the Republican Party platform, I believe, says it doesn't believe in toll roads. But it also, the party has cut taxes and we face needs. How do you pay for all this stuff if you can't charge fees and you can't raise taxes?
Let me use this as an example. You take a county government. They need to build a park because it's just something that's needed. Mm-hmm. So they want to build a park. So they're either going to do a bond or they're going to – and if they do a bond, they're going to say how we're going to pay for that bond. And you're going to say new growth. And because the reason we're building this park is because our population is growing so much. Every person that moves in your county is paying some kind of property tax, either on the home they've bought or the person they're renting from is going to pay property tax. So growth should come and these expenses should be covered by the very growth that's happening in the state.
But there's always a lag time between the money brought in as a result of growth and the increased tax
bonds,
base. Okay.
I.e. bonds. Mm-hmm. And that's why school systems and folks like that do bonds, because the growth is here and the money's not.
Okay.
It's the same way nationwide. Our growth, our population explosion should be taking care of this. You and I know if we could sit down with the nation's budget, between us, we could lop off billions of dollars that do not need to be spent. We know that. We don't need to be playing golf every time we turn around. We don't need to be going to Hawaii every time we turn around. And those are the visible things. You and I know that underneath there is just a plethora of things that money is spent on that Republicans and Democrats spend it on that does not need to be spent to, so we can take care of our basic needs.
The state platform also says that education reform requires nationally normed testing. Why then have Republicans in the legislature introduced a bill to stop the Common Core standards that they adopted in 2010? Because isn't nationally normed testing and instruction a part of Common Core?
Well, I don't think it said any old nationally normed that anybody writes. I mean, if the one that's written is not necessarily a good one, I don't know if you have kids, But I'm not even a legislator anymore, and my phone is rung off the hook and my email and my Facebook for the last 6 months with parents showing me the tests that are the homework that their child has to do. I am not the sharpest tool in the drawer, but I'm a pretty smart cookie, and I can't do this homework. Could I do it better if I was in the classroom and maybe got some instruction? I just don't know. Why? And we all know this one thing about education. Children do best when their parents are involved in their education. When you eliminate the ability of a parent to help a child with homework, haven't you just lopped off the biggest part of improving
education?
But
there are
a lot
of parents who didn't do well in school, and their kids might be able to do well in school, but their parents can't really help them, and that's nobody's fault. So what do you do for those kids? Because the parents don't have time to go back to school.
Absolutely. We're already dealing with that. What I'm saying is, should we add to that? Should we add to that group of students whose parents are not able to, either by lack of education or by the need to work two jobs, you know, just circumstances that keep them being able to help their children, or those that just don't care about their children? Why add to that by adding an education plan that the average parent who would normally help their child be able to help their child? Those children are already making it through the system, and things are working pretty well. You dumb down the whole system, and what have you got? I'm not saying the premise of Common Core isn't good. I've said for years, how is it that children in Asian nations do so much better than our children? Well, longer school days, longer school years, scary school year, harder testing. I know that's what this was meant to be. I understand that, and I praise that thought. But when I have this many intelligent people who can't help their child with homework, I've got to believe something is askew.
I have 10 seconds. What's at stake in the midterm elections from the GOP point of view?
Well, we think the nation, and we think Tom Tillis is going to win it. We're going to work hard. We're going to get out there on the ground and do our part. And we're going to hold his feet to the fire once he wins it, and we think he'll win it.
Carolyn Justice is vice chair of the North Carolina Republican Party and a former state house representative who stood up for what she believed in, term limits, and stepped down. Thank you for the hour. Appreciate it.
Thank you.